Welcome to the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show, a real estate investment program. Listen and learn how to use real estate to build wealth and passive income streams for you and your family. We bring you experts every day to discuss and answer your questions on everything from single-family homes all the way up to 600-plus unit apartment complexes. And now, the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show.
Welcome to the show. My name is Al Gordon, and as always, we're working on your financial freedom. You know, we finally made it to Friday. It's been a very interesting week, and I'll tell you what, I've been aggressively looking for property as replacement property based on the fact that I sold some other assets that were underperforming in comparison with what my other investments were doing. So my wife and I, we made an informed decision that we would sell three duplexes that we bought a long time ago. And as part of that strategy, we would transition the proceeds from that sale using what's called a 1031 exchange. In other words, it is a legal action where we move money out of those investments into replacement property, and we can avoid paying the capital gains taxes and any deferred depreciation expense and other things that may be calculated into the taxes that we would pay if we just outright sold them and didn't do the 1031 exchange. That has had me on the hunt for a little bit of time. And I'll tell you what, I've been looking at a lot of different assets that we have the potential to buy. And to be honest with you, you have to look at what's out there. You really need to make informed decisions when you pursue real estate. I mean, that's just the way it is. So what that got me to thinking was, I wanted to share some information with you. I wanted to give you some feedback of things that, you know, I have been doing, some tools in my tool bag, some arrows in my quiver, whatever you want to call it. I want to share some information with you because I think it's important for you to understand maybe what I'm going through, but also some of the things that I take into consideration as I'm going through this process. And the first thing that hit me square between the eyes was the understanding of two acronyms that are out there. Now, I've never talked about these on the show before, but these are acronyms that exist. And you probably have not heard these acronyms either. So what I'm going to do, let's just get into them, what they are. Here's the acronyms. Poor, rich. Yeah, those are the acronyms. And you're thinking, what? Okay, I understand what poor means, I understand what rich means, but where's the acronym part? Okay, so here it is, POOR. The acronym stands for passing over opportunities repeatedly. That's what the poor do. Rich, residual income creates happiness. That's what the rich do. You know, with the evidence mounting that 401ks and IRAs are not effective tools for retiring Americans. Now, keep in mind, about 90% of Americans are retiring at or below poverty income levels. You can go out to the Census Bureau website. You can do your own research. But I'll tell you what, that POOR acronym really hits this on the head. When the poor and the middle class go out to invest, they usually go for, well, the 401ks and the IRAs. They do this not because they know it's really, you know, it's a great thing. No, they do it because they just don't know any other option. This is the path that society imprints on our minds at a very young age. So essentially what the poor are doing, they are passing over opportunities repeatedly because they don't know any better. And I'm not picking on them. They just don't know what they don't know. They don't even see the opportunities that are all around. So ask yourself this question. How many different ways do I know to make money? And for most people in America, there's really only two answers. Go out and get a job and trade time for money, or speculate in the stock market. I mean, that's really what it is. I mean, that's what I learned when I was younger. So does it makes sense when I say that most people are in 401ks and IRAs because they just don't know any better? Well, what do you think? I mean, to be honest with you, we're not teaching our kids anything different either. You know, I know a lot of millionaires. I have been very fortunate to meet a lot of people as a member of Lifestyles Unlimited who have gone from non-millionaire status to millionaire to multi-millionaire status. And guess what the majority of them don't have? That's right, 401ks and IRAs. And guess who those plans are designed for? They were really designed for the rich, high income earners, not the middle class or the poor. It was originally designed as a tax dodge for the wealthy. That's right. I'm not making this up. According to CNBC, the accidental retirement revolution began in 1978 when Congress decided to alter the tax code with a thing called the Revenue Act. The act included a provision, section, get this, 401k, that gave employers a tax-free way to defer compensation from bonuses or stock options. The law went into effect on January 1st of 1980, and that act then opened the floodgates for employers to veer away from what had been a traditional defined benefit pension plan to a more cost-effective, at least for them, retirement plan such as the 401k. Then, why don't the wealthy use these plans? It's because the wealthy know many different ways to make money, not just two. They also know that one of the most important things about wealth that the poor and middle class don't. The people who retire in the top percent of America build passive income streams. They're not trying to save their way to retirement. That's true. They're not. The people who retire poor follow a specific math equation that involves a lot of speculation. And when we come back from the break, I'm going to finish up this thought process. And what I'm going to get into are a couple of concepts that you need to know about. One of them are red flags to a bad property investment. And the other, well, you just have to tune in to find out.
Del Wamsley talks about finding that one thing that made sense for the lifestyle.
I looked at franchises. I looked at multi-level marketing. I looked at everything in the world. But nothing made as much sense as buying one simple little rental property.
Real estate is your best option. Real estate makes sense. Lifestyles Unlimited will teach you how to buy your first rental property. Join our live online free workshop to find out more. Register at lifestylesunlimitedworkshop.com.
Welcome back to the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show. Now, let's get back to your map to financial freedom.
Welcome back to the show. So I addressed a couple of acronyms. Now, you've probably never heard these words as acronyms before. I know I never have. But there are two acronyms out there. Poor. Rich. Yeah. I mean, for most of us, they're just words, right? They describe people that have money or people that don't have money. Well, I'm taking it one step further. And what I'm saying is that poor people have a tendency of passing over opportunities repeatedly. Whereas rich people, well, they utilize residual income creating happiness. I kind of ad-libbed on that one a little bit. It's really residual income creates happiness. So anyway, what I was talking about in the first segment is that we are programmed by society to do certain things. And if you're like me, if you're in my age group, back in 1978, when Congress made a decision to change the laws, and they came up with the Revenue Act, in which case that Revenue Act included Section 401k that gave employees a tax-free way to defer compensation from bonuses or stock options. That law went into effect in 1980, on January 1st. Now, January 1st, 1980. Let's see, where was I? I think I was a sophomore in high school, and I'm 56 years of age. So I would venture to say that the vast majority of you listening to me right now might be in my age bracket or are either older or you're younger. And the point I want to make is this: if you're in my age bracket or younger, you're not even aware of things like pensions being a viable alternative to retirement. Yeah, those things just, they kind of imploded in 1980 when that law went into effect, because all of these corporations realized that, holy smokes, if we set up something like a 401k program and we use that as the vehicle to allow our employees to retire, we've basically cut the umbilical cord. We have. And as a result of that, that puts the burden on the employee to, quote unquote, make the investment decisions into that 401k and to build up their own retirement fund. We, as the corporation or the employer, that monkey's off our back. Yeah. So what I want to share with you right now is that the people who wind up retiring poor follow a specific mathematical equation that involves a lot of speculation. First, they speculate on how long they're going to live. Then, on how much money they will need each year to live. Then, they speculate on their healthcare cost. You know, what's that going to be? And so on and so on and so on. You see the problem here? Yeah, it's all speculation. It's all guesswork. None of us know how long we're going to live. We don't. We don't know how long we will live. And although we may be enjoying great health right now, we don't know what the future holds. You know, there's a lot of disease out there. There's a lot of illness out there. There's things. I mean, your body wears out over time. It is just a fact of being organic. It really is. It's just a fact of being organic. So while the 10% who retire wealthy do so, they do so in a different way. First of all, they figure out what their monthly expenses for everything from health insurance to housing, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then they go out and they produce enough income from their investments that it exceeds that number. And we basically say this, we say when you have assets that are producing income streams for you, and that income stream meets or exceeds your ordinary expenses in life, you have achieved retirement. And essentially what you've really achieved is control over your life. Yeah, that's really what it's all about. So since the income streams are what I like to consider semi-permanent, and the reason I call them semi-permanent is that you could have an asset that is producing income streams and you may make a decision to sell that property. Okay, when you sell that property, that monthly income stream is going to stop until you replace that property with another asset that does the same thing. But you do all of this making informed decisions. That's the way it works. So remember, rich residual income creates happiness is a better acronym to use than poor, which is passing over opportunities repeatedly. Interesting, isn't it? Okay, so they're very simple acronyms, but powerful reminders that there are different paths for you to follow to retirement. And the takeaway from all of this is this: where do you want to end up? Do you want to be in the top 10%? Or do you want to be in the bottom 90%? And I don't care how old you are, you can make a decision today to change the path that you're on. It's that simple. There are people waking up and realizing that what society has told us to do, it's either working or it's not working. And more people are starting to realize that it's not working. I mean, you can go out and you can look at how much money, on average, people have put away in these 401ks. And I will tell you this, that number is not a great number, because when you look at that number and you determine how much money you need to live off of, and then you start doing the math and you start figuring out that, okay, if I need $40,000 a year to live off of and I've saved $200,000, well, the simple math tells you you're going to run out of money in 5 years. And if your life expectancy is longer than 5 years, you've got a big problem on your hands. And I don't care how much that stock market goes up. Oh, by the way, it has a tendency to go down, and it does so from time to time, which could put you in a even more perilous position. Do you want to gamble? Or do you want to find a way to invest your money so that that money is working for you? That money is producing monthly or quarterly income streams for you, and that money coming in is paying all of your associated bills, and it's giving you control back in your life. And control is a very important thing. I'll tell you what, when we come back from the break, what I'm going to do is I'm going to talk about some of the red flags out there regarding buying investment property.
Warning, listening to the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show will change your life. We will teach you how to create wealth and passive income so you can be financially free. And now, back to your host.
Welcome back to the show. So in the second half of today's show, I'm going to switch gears on you, and I'm going to talk about what I consider to be some of the red flags that are out there that if you do these things, it could be problematic for your investing. Here's one of the concerns that I have. People will make the decision that they want to get involved with real estate investing, and they hear what we talk about on the show. They understand, you know, after listening to us, that there's five different ways to make money in real estate. Technically six, if you're talking about multifamily properties that consist of five units or larger. And they just think that, okay, I'm going to go do it. I'm going to go do it. And one of the things that they fail to do is they fail to get a proper education. They figure, I'm smart. I can figure this out on the fly. I'm just going to go for it. And it creates a poison pill for them. It does. So I think the most important thing you need to do is to obtain a legitimate, excellent education regarding how to invest in real estate. Now, I'll be the first one to tell you, and I've said this on the show many times before, and I'm going to say it again right now. I have two business degrees. I'm not trying to impress you, but what I'm trying to do is impress upon you the fact that I'm well educated. I understand how businesses operate. I understand money valuation. I understand all of the concepts that are taught in business school because I have studied business. But one of the things that they don't teach you in business school is how to invest correctly. Now, they'll teach you things like, you know, the cost of money. They'll teach you things like the return rates and things like that. But they don't get into the nuts and bolts of how you would go about investing correctly into assets that produce income streams for you. They really just don't do it. And to be honest with you, I think the reason why they do that is because the concept of business school is to educate you in the things that you need to know so that you can get a good job with a corporation or other entity and operate that business or a portion of that business on behalf of the employer. And it really isn't until you get up into those upper echelons, you know, like the CEO or, you know, super high up there, where you really start looking at what the organization does and how that organization makes money. Yeah, that's just my opinion. I may be way off in left field, but that's my opinion. So the first thing you need to do is get an education. That is paramount. Now, once you have the education, that doesn't mean that emotion won't creep back into the picture. So you've got to be careful. You have to be objective. And, you know, you have to consider what it is you're planning to do. But hey, let's say you've done it. I mean, you've decided to be a part of that top 10%. You've obtained that proper education on how to invest in income producing real estate. And really the next step is to go out and find the right property that will help you get there. In order to get a decent return on investment from, let's say, your very first apartment deal, your job is to make sure that you are the beneficiary of decent passive income streams. Now, passive income occurs when you make money by not putting a lot of money up front or effort or time into the deal. For example, with an investment in income producing rental property, you make money when your residents make their monthly rent payments. And you're going to use that rent payment to pay the expenses of owning and operating the investment. For instance, paying the monthly mortgage expense, paying the property taxes, paying the insurance, and any other associated expenses related to that asset. And what is left over is the passive income, which is essentially your profit. Now, as you're aware, I'm currently on the hunt for a replacement property since I'm doing a 1031 exchange after selling some underperforming assets that my wife and I bought a long time ago. And I've learned a few lessons along the way when buying property. And a lot of these lessons have also come from the people that I associate with, because I have surrounded myself with like-minded individuals who are also investing in real estate assets. So what I'm going to do with you now is share with you what I consider to be the five common red flags to what could be a bad property investment. And what these red flags do is they warn you that it's time for you to move on and find a different property. So the biggest one is this: the numbers, they don't make any sense. They don't make any sense on paper. The bottom line is this: you expect to make money from your investment in any property that you buy. So if the seller won't budge on what might be a rather high price for a property, especially after it's been on the market without selling for quite some time, then that in itself is a sign to forget about that particular property and move on to a better investment. Now, what am I talking about? Well, let me just relate with you a recent experience I had. I was looking at a property and it was a nice looking property. I mean, it actually looked pretty good. I mean, from the pictures that were available and things like that. And the first thing that I do is I sit down and I try and make financial sense out of the deal. I don't jump in the car and drive across town or anything like that. What I do is I look at the numbers first and I try and articulate what that investment will do for me. Well, in the case of this particular property that was presented to me, I did my analysis and here's what I found. I found that if I put 20% down on that property based on the rents that the seller said he was collecting on this property. Now, of course, I haven't reviewed anything. You know, we're not even at that stage. I'm just going based on what the seller said. So when I calculated the rent rolls and then I calculated the expenses, and of course, I calculated property tax based on what I thought, you know, my numbers would be. And then I calculated insurance costs based on what my numbers would be. And I calculated other potential expenses based on what the seller provided. And then I took a look at what the net operating incomes were for the property. I also took a look at what my debt service would be and what that would cost every month. And I looked at what was left over. And what I found on this particular property, even though it looked great, I mean, the sales brochure was nice and everything like that, this particular property was only going to pay 1.47% cash on cash return. And that didn't work for me. That absolutely didn't work for me. See, this guy was trying to take advantage of the fact that, you know, the property markets are really red hot and was looking for somebody that would be willing to settle for lower numbers. but that wasn't me. And when we come back from the break, I've got four more things to identify for you. Back after this.
Here's Lifestyles Unlimited founder and CEO, self-made multimillionaire, and national radio host, Del Wamsley, on getting the information you need to get through this.
So you ask yourself, isn't this the wrong time to get out of the stock market? Very well could be. But maybe it might go down. And then you ask yourself, man, if I would have had some of that money, I could have used it. People are going to be afraid. And the people who are in real estate that are losing money are going to be afraid. And they're going to want to get out. And when they do, we're going to be able to go in and buy at very advantageous prices that are going to change our family's future, quite honestly. So you need information on how to do that. You need the knowledge of how to get through this. You need to get into Lifestyles right now.
Lifestyles Unlimited has been helping people succeed since 1990. Join us for our free online real estate workshop and learn the seven principles we teach to run our businesses and provide for our families. Register at LifestylesUnlimitedWorkshop.com. Welcome back to the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show. It's time to turn up the volume and fine-tune your passive income plan so you can create the lifestyle you've always wanted.
Welcome back to the show. So the last segment, I was telling you that there was a property I looked at. Looked really good. The sales brochure was nice. The property had been renovated. It was essentially a yield play property. But then when I analyzed the numbers, and I used a little bit of a conservative approach to doing that, what I found was that based on what the seller was asking for the property in relation to what I should have paid for the property, it didn't marry up. And I asked my broker, I said, can you make contact with them? And, you know, if we need to do a letter of intent, we can do that. But see if they would be agreeable to taking a lower price on the property. Well, the response was, no, the price is the price, and that's just the way it is. So you know what I did? I said, well, given the fact that there's really no meat on the bone on that particular property, and, you know, if the seller felt that there was no way to operationally increase the revenue streams, and I pretty much determined based on my analysis that, you know, the rents were pretty much at market rents, the person was asking more for the property than I believed it was worth in the marketplace. And there was really no room in that particular property for me to, you know, go ahead and pay that price and then make my money by doing improvements to the property or increasing operating efficiencies or things like that. So you know what I did? I said, thanks, but no thanks. And I passed, I walked. Now there's another red flag out there, which is called the lack of hard facts. You know, if a seller can't provide you with statistics on rentals or vacancy rates or neighborhood allure or year to year profits, you know, things like that, it's probably wise to guess that the success rate for rentals in that particular building is going to be low. You know, you should never enter a deal blind. You should move on to the next profitable investment. You know, same goes if all the numbers are guesswork on the part of the owner. You know, tell them you want to see the hard numbers or walk. I will tell you, there's been at least a dozen deals that I've taken a look at over the last week or two where the seller indicated that they were making a certain amount of rent. And then when I asked for supplemental information, you know, can you share with me, you know, the last 12 months of the rent rolls, they didn't want to produce it. And I'll tell you what, it tells me that they're probably hiding something. The other problem that happens, especially when you're dealing with smaller apartment communities like what I'm looking to buy, is that a lot of folks that own those properties, they kind of run them as afterthought businesses. In other words, they don't spend the time or the effort to properly organize all of the financial information. So when you ask for information because you're looking to support or refute a fact that the seller's making, it's not readily available. And I'm guessing at tax time, these are the people that are always sweating out taxes because now they're trying to go back and recreate 12 months worth of books, so to speak, in order to present all that stuff to their tax person. So, you know, I think that if a person is going to sell a piece of property, they have to position that property in the best light possible, and they should present information that supports their price. And if they can't do it, you know what you should do? You should say thanks, but no thanks, and look for the next one. Now, here's another thing that actually has kind of creeped up in some of the properties I've looked at, and it has to do with the location of the property and the potential that the property is maybe in a bad neighborhood. You know, the whole idea of buying property for investment is to buy in, well, I mean, the perfect model is you buy in a hot or an up-and-coming neighborhood, or a neighborhood that's got potential to do better, you know, over the next 3 to 5, maybe 10 years. I can't be more clear when I tell you this. Don't waste your time or money investing in a property that is located in a poor or a declining area, because that neighborhood is going in the wrong direction. You know, once the area becomes known in the community as bad or unsafe, or maybe it's slummy, it can take a long time to lose that stigma. And that can have a negative effect on the rent pricing you can command for that property, as well as deter great residents from selecting your property as a place that they will call home. I went and looked at a property. The property made it past the initial screening, you know, the numbers. The numbers made sense. They indicated that the property was producing cash flow. Okay. And then when I asked for some additional information, they provided me the additional information I asked for. And lo and behold, the supporting evidence was there. Okay. They're commanding a certain amount of rents. So when I did the initial look from the financials on this property, I thought, okay, this property might be in contention. And when I looked at the general area, And I basically did just kind of, you know, where is this property located in the city? I kind of said, okay, well, that area over there, that could be good or it could be bad. Okay, at this point, the wife and I got in the vehicle and we drove over to that neighborhood. And as we were driving towards the neighborhood, I could see, you know, some signs where there was some good signs and some bad signs. And as we got closer to the actual property, the good signs started dissipating. The bad signs took control. And when we got to the property, and we just drove by it, we weren't driving onto the property, we were not going to mess with the residents or anything like that. I mean, the idea was get an idea for where the property sits. As we drove to the property down the road that it was on, we started seeing more and more boarded up houses. And these houses were in disrepair. And the houses that were not boarded up, well, they were in disrepair too. And as we got to the actual physical property location, we started seeing signs of gang graffiti and things like that. And as we drove by the property, we actually saw a drug deal go down on this particular property. And, you know, my wife said, oh no, absolutely not. And she immediately understood as we were getting closer and closer to this property, that this property was in a bad area, that, you know, in order to do well, even though we could have bought the property and it was cash flowing, we would have essentially been slumlords. And that's not what we want to be. We are not slumlords. We want to make sure that we're providing clean, functional workforce housing for a population of people that absolutely deserves it. And this particular property, once we got into the area, we realized it's not going to fly. So we eliminated that property based on that. Now, along that lines, another thing you need to take into consideration is that you cannot get yourself into a deal where you spend too much money on the repairs for the property. You know, I've seen a lot of apartment buildings and houses that look like great investments online or on paper, but when I actually go to see the site with my own eyes, it tells me a different story. You know, a property in decline or one that's been neglected for far too long has the potential to cost more in trouble and money than it's worth for you if you expect to make a profit. So, you know, I've looked at a couple deals like that, that, you know, on the surface it looked okay, but when we started taking a look at what needs to be done to make this property really a great property, it was going to cost way too much money to bring that property up to standard in comparison to what the seller of the property wanted for the property, and they wouldn't budge on the price. So we walked away. Now, the final thing that I think is a red flag is this. The property itself is just a lemon. You know, it might be the bad neighborhood. It might be too much money to fix it. Whatever the reason, if a property has been for sale for months and months and it hasn't sold, it might be because it's too much trouble than it's worth. It could be for a variety of reasons, but that tells me the property is a lemon. So what you need to do is you need to do your detective work on properties that have been on sale for far too long and find out exactly what is occurring on those properties. I've got another example where we found one where, you know, everything looked kind of okay and the neighborhood wasn't so bad, but there was something wrong with the property. So we asked for a copy of the inspection report that somebody else had paid for who was looking at the property. And, you know, we found that property was a lemon. You know, it from a numbers perspective, way too much money. Look, I hope I've helped to advance your real estate investing career today. And, you know, go out and get a proper real estate education before you get involved and get yourself connected. And remember, it's not the money, it's the lifestyle.
Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show. Ready for more of the map? Visit lifestylesunlimited.com. Explore our videos and articles. Click on the radio tab to access past show podcasts. View the radio show schedule and listen to our best of radio shows. Want to continue the conversation? Follow Lifestyles Unlimited on Facebook today. Join us next time. And until then, remember, it's not the money, it's the lifestyle.
The information and opinions you hear on the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show are those of the hosts, guests, and callers and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of this station, its affiliates, its management, or advertisers. The Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show is for entertainment purposes only. Please consult a professional regarding your personal investment needs. Nothing presented on the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show constitutes an endorsement, recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or security.